From the heartland of America on the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be. Across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Mayan Code, Time Acceleration and Awakening the World with Barbara Hand Clow. I'm looking forward to that. Barbara is a first-time guest. You know, every year, the president of our network, this huge, vast network, gives out awards. He calls it the President's Award to those employees of the network who have provided just outstanding service during the year. And a lot of people at the network, very worthy of this award. And some got it this year. But one in particular, I want to thank personally. It's our producer, Lisa Lyon. Lisa got the President's Award for her dedication, for her tremendous work. And I got to tell you, holding my hand 5 years ago when I came in to replace Art Bell at a moment that was pretty huge for me. And Lisa just hung in there and gave me a few pointers and jumped up and down whenever I made mistakes. And, of course, I still make mistakes, and she still jumps up and down, but this time I can get away with it. But she is one of the recipients of our President's Award. And let me tell you, Lisa, you are one of the best I have ever worked with in my 99 years of broadcasting for everything you do. Canada has announced a plan to extend the NAFTA superhighway network north in a way that would finish a continental grid designed to accommodate an anticipated tsunami of containers from China and the Far East. The Canadian Intelligence Super Corridor is a national transportation route designed to reach from the west coast ports of Vancouver and Prince Rupert to Montreal and Halifax. The person who broke that story on WorldNet Daily, none other than, I would like to say, our contributing editor, Jerry Corsi. Hey, Jerry, welcome back.
George, great pleasure to be back with you. Thank you very much.
So those skeptics who continue to say there is not going to be a superhighway, here you are finding that they continue to extend this thing.
Well, that's right, George, and it's on the Canadian government websites. I mean, this CISCOR, or Canadian Intelligence Super Corridor, if you just look at the map I published in WorldNet Daily today, it's clear it extends from the east coast of Canada, Prince Rupert and Vancouver, these two deep water ports on the Pacific, all the way across to Halifax on the Atlantic Ocean in Canada, and then it connects with the NAFTA Superhighway, the I-35 corridor, that's represented by NASCO, the North American Super Corridor Coalition, down into Mexico, connecting with these Mexican ports, Lazaro Cardenas and Manzanillo on the Pacific, and also with Canamex, another north-south corridor that comes through Idaho Falls, Salt Lake City, Las Vegas, Phoenix, and down into Mexico. I mean, think the map tells the whole story, and it's right on Canadian government websites.
And you are convinced, Jerry, that this still is just one of those things for this North American Union.
Absolutely, George. This whole redesign of North American infrastructure, transportation infrastructure, is designed to bring the containers from China, you know, the millions and millions of containers, as we lose manufacturing, the middle class being destroyed in the process, coming in on a cheap set of intermodal, which means the containers can be moved from these giant container ships to trucks and trains and then moved through these, you know, these NAFTA super corridors, continental, to warehouses where they can be regionally delivered. So if these multinational corporations, which are driving this agenda, get cheap labor in China, now they want to get cheap transportation of the containers throughout North America. That's what these super corridors are all about.
All right, Jerry, thanks for the update. If I don't talk to you before Christmas, you and your family have a great one.
You too, George. Thank you very much.
That's Jerry Corsi's latest work is The Late Great Planet Earth. It's a bestseller. Time magazine has named Russian President Vladimir Putin as its 2007 Person of the Year. The nod went to the Russian leader because of Putin's extraordinary feat of leadership in taking a country, they say, that was in chaos and bringing it stability. In India, two tigers killed a man who stuck his arm into their enclosure in northeastern India, ripping off his arm as his family and dozens of visitors looked on in shock. A probable active glacier has been identified for the very first time on Mars. The icy feature has been spotted in images from the European Space Agency's Mars Express spacecraft. Ancient glaciers, many millions of years old, have been seen before on the Red Planet, but these ones may only be several thousand years old. Yes, UFOs do exist. Japan's top government spokesman said this. The government and the comment by Chief Cabinet Secretary Nobutaka Machimura drew laughter, though, from reporters at his regular briefing on government policy. Earlier, the cabinet, responding to an opposition lawmaker's question, issued a statement saying it could not confirm any cases of unidentified flying objects. This is an issue, they say, that the nation is interested in. It is a defense issue, and a confirmation operation needs to take place. But the government does not even try to collect information necessary for the confirmation. But the prime minister stuck to the official view. I have yet to confirm that UFOs exist. But you know what? They're still saying that they probably believe them. In a moment, Nick Redfern joins us. We're going to get his reaction to this. And some other issues. Nick will be with us for the entire hour. At the half, we'll open up the phone lines and you can talk with him too. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Nick Redfern has been interested in UFOs since 1978. His main area of research centers around determining what has been learned about the UFO subject at an official level in Britain. He has written 7 books, and his new one, On the Trail of the Saucer Spies, UFOs and Government Surveillance, which is the examination of how and why intelligence agencies spy on people on the UFO subject. He's our guest this hour. Hey, Nick, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, George. Thanks for having me on. I'm good, thanks.
My pleasure. What's your reaction to this Japanese story? It's strange.
Well, you know, it's interesting because this is kind of, I guess, in some ways, a pattern that we've seen over the past year or two with either serving people within government or the military or the intelligence community or retired people of similar ranks, obviously when they're in power, coming forward and, you know, giving their opinions on the UFO subject in what, from our perspective, is a positive light. And, you know, I think the most important thing from my perspective about this story is that, yes, it gets us talking in the UFO research community, but I think more importantly, it potentially gets other people who wouldn't necessarily consider the subject to any great degree, gets them talking, the mainstream media, you know, in a way that doesn't necessarily poke fun, but actually thinks, wow, you know, this is somebody who it actually does hold a position of responsibility. And I think even, you know, even if it's just a small statement like this one was, then I think it can still have sort of profound implications. And I know this purely from looking on the internet today, how the story spread, not just around, obviously, the Japanese media, but the US and Europe, England, you know, all the London newspapers are reporting on it. So, you know, it's a positive thing. And I sometimes wonder if, you know, possibly has a green light been switched on to, say, to certain people, you know, just make a passing comment and let's just see what the reaction is, how the people respond to it.
Do you think someone in government in Japan gave this individual permission to say this?
Well, I mean, I don't know that personally, but I mean, I know that's been discussed on various, some of the discussion groups I'm on, certainly, you know, the idea of testing the water, so to speak, with a little statement here in one country and then another statement in another country. And collectively, then you have a lot of little statements, so to speak. And I think that can certainly count for something in terms of the spin-off fact that, you know, that mainstream media then picks up on it.
And you brought up something here very fascinating, Nick. Countries in various areas popping these little things out almost as if there's a worldwide concerted effort to slowly give us disclosure.
Yeah, and, you know, whether or not it's a concerted effort and the people who are making the statements are part of it, or possibly, you know, it's almost like the train running down the track. One person says something and gets a positive response, and somebody else knows something and thinks, well, okay, I'll say what I know. You know, they feel more comfortable about speaking out. I think possibly it could be a little bit of both. But, you know, whatever lies at the heart of it, whether it is a concerted effort or whether it's, you know, the next person and the next person thinking, well, the person prior to me got a good reception, I'll say what I know. I think it could be so, like a connection of the, or a combination of the two. But, you know, I think it has to be good for us purely because of the level of standing of these people.
Nick, when do you think we're going to start getting this here in the United States, this kind of leak? Not from pilots and military people that get together with groups. We just saw one at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. But when are government spokespeople going to leak information like this?
Well, you know, that's the difficult thing, George. I think probably the countries that are speaking out and the people in their respective countries are probably the ones that aren't fully conversant, shall we say, with all the, you know, all the deep facts and secrets. I think it's probably, you know, maybe Russia, America, Britain, one or two other nations that are fully conversant to the extent that they can be with what's going on. And I think perhaps the higher up the chain you are, the less likely people are to talk, you know, if they know the full story. And I think possibly people further down the line, perhaps like the Japanese government and other nations, realize something's going on and think, well, hey, you know, we'll say what we know. And I think possibly that could be the explanation as to why we're not necessarily getting sort of the smoking gun from people over here. But in saying that, you know, who knows if this is sort of a long-term agenda. I mean, in as far as the powers that be are concerned, perhaps, you know, a 2 or 3, a 4 year timetable to slowly have somebody in this country say something and somebody else, and then let's have a few military people come forward. That might be the, you know, the process that's on the cards.
If it's a leakage of a disclosure program, why are they doing it? Why did they decide, if they did, why did they decide to start leaking information that UFOs do exist?
Well, I think, you know, to an extent we have to speculate, but possibly, I mean, my argument has always been that if, whether it's good news or bad news behind the UFO mystery, if it's bad news, can it be any worse than at the height of the Cold War when everybody around the world faced nuclear annihilation from each other? You know, we live with that every day. For the most part, 99.9% of us didn't go crazy or run to mental hospitals, have nervous breakdowns. We got on with our everyday lives and hoped it didn't happen. So I think even if it was bad news, we could take whatever lies at the heart of the UFO puzzle. And I think possibly there are those people in government that recognize we're not stupid, we're not idiotic, and that we can take it whether or not they have the full answers and whether or not there may be some disturbing angles to the subject. You know, on the other hand, there's the possibility that what we're seeing as or perceiving as an official leak may actually be people on the inside that want the story getting out, and they're subtly pulling the strings when the official line is still to keep it from the public. You know, I think there is this temptation to think if people on the inside are telling the story, perhaps they've got official sanction. It may be the other way around, you know, that there's actually a battle going on behind the scenes. One part wants the information releasing and another part doesn't, possibly.
And you know, Nick, there's no doubt in my mind now, too. If they came right out and told us we've been visited and, you know, let's not get into, you know, what are the causes and reasons for these visitations. I think most people now on this planet would say, we knew it. We knew it.
Yeah, I think I would actually agree with you on that. One of the things that I do sometimes wonder is that obviously in earlier years, earlier decades, when, you know, the secrecy barrier really came down, I sometimes wonder if part of the secrecy relates not just to the UFO subject, but what has been done, quote, in the name of national security to hide that secret. I wonder if, you know, there are some sort of dark tales that the intelligence community has been up to, you know, to prevent us finding out. And it would be as much of an embarrassment and a difficult situation to not just admit that UFOs are here, but what we actually did to hide that story.
Let's talk a little bit about your work on the trail of saucer spies. Give us a synopsis. I know you were with me a few months ago on this, Dick. Go ahead.
Yeah, basically, saucer spies is like a full-length study of how and why the intelligence community in a number of nations around the world have routinely spied upon people within the UFO research community. I think all of us who get involved in ufology at some point, you know, hear stories of phone tapping, mail tampering, or, you know, visits from intelligence agents warning them not to talk about things, typical Men in Black type encounters. And I thought, you know, it might be a nice time to pull all the information and data that I got, documentation under one cover, and you know, present it to the research community and people interested. And this is basically a combination of things like FBI files, surveillance files on people like George Adamski, George Van Tassel, a lot of the early pioneers, people like Leonard Stringfield and Gray Barker, whose FBI files they got hold of through the Freedom of Information Act, and also talking to people in the UFO community and interviewing them about their own experience of official surveillance, shall we say. And the thing I always point out to people is that if government agencies are taking an interest in us, there's obviously something at the heart of the mystery. You know, the money wouldn't be wasted and the manpower, I don't think, if we were just looking into lights in the sky. So I think, you know, by default, if we're doing this and we're being watched, then obviously something's going on.
You are convinced, though, something is going on, aren't you?
Oh, yes, there's no doubt. I mean, I got interested because my father was in the British Royal Air Force and actually tracked UFOs on radar. There's no doubt in my mind that a small percentage of UFOs are genuinely unknown from somewhere else, you know, whether it's extraterrestrial, literally, or some sort of, you know, weird dimensional phenomenon. I don't know, but something I'm convinced is coming from somewhere, so to speak.
Why do some people theorize, though, that these could be extra-dimensional type visitations or beings? I come from the old school, Nick, where I want to kick it. You know, I want bricks and mortar. I want to see the tires on these things. Mm. And to think that they're floating in from other dimensions, that they disappear and they go back, I just find that hard to accept.
Well, you know, I think the sort of the black and white image of going from planet to planet or some solar system to solar system does make more sense. I think the one thing, perhaps more than any other, that convinces some people that it's a dimensional thing, I guess, are kind of the more, some of the high strangeness aspects of some stories, you know, as you mentioned, of UFOs just zipping in and out, so to speak, and some that seem to have parallel or differences, I should say, sorry, in terms of, you know, you talk about nuts and bolts craft. Others seem almost like dreamlike experiences. Now, you know, it's been argued, and this is quite a rational argument, that, you know, a very advanced technology to us might seem kind of magical and supernatural because we just purely don't understand the technology. And I don't think, you know, if you talk about a dimensional aspect, it doesn't necessarily rule out aliens. You know, people talk about things like wormholes, for example, zipping in and out of you know, one area of space to another, but not traveling, you know, by linear space, so to speak, but traveling in these dimensional aspects, shall we say. So in that respect, I don't think, you know, one necessarily negates the other. I think it allows room for both in some ways.
What about time travelers, though, Nick? What about them?
That's another interesting thing. I mean, I think, you know, that certainly makes great science fiction, the idea that perhaps the UFO-nauts, for want of a better term, are our descendants way in the future. A number of books have been written on this area, and, I mean, a number of people have postulated this idea and have come up with good arguments as to why that could be the case. I think, you know, the only thing we're lacking is evidence that time travelers are amongst us. The idea of time travel is gaining a lot more respectability than it did in the past. You know, who's to say that further down the line we won't be building, you know, biological robots to do tasks for us, and perhaps that's what things like the Greys are. You know, you send something back because you don't want to disrupt the time frame, if you like, by going
soon.
Yourself.
Soon? Do you think we'll really get the answer soon, Nick?
Well, you know, I mean, at one point, George, sort of 5 years ago, I did. Now, I'm just not sure. I think there's a conflict on the inside as to whether or not this information should be revealed. And I think part of the reason for the secrecy relates to economics and science, you know, what's going to if there are replacements for the oil industry and how it might affect the world. I think there's a lot of spin-offs and potential worries that the official world probably thinks about when it decides whether or not to release this information. And so I'm always in kind of two minds. And for me now, you know, not to avoid the question, my honest answer is I just don't know. I would hope the answer would come. And if it does, you know, we just take it and see what it is. If it doesn't, you know, it's just up to us to keep digging and trying to find the answer.
You want to stick around for phone calls, Nick?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Nick Redfern is our guest. We're going to take all things UFOs this hour with Nick. His latest book, On the Trail of Saucer Spies, you can get all the information about his work, excellent work, by going to coasttocoastam.com. Take a look at his linked up website, which is, and I'll spell it for you. A lot of you need that and like that. NickRedfern.com, NickRedfern.com. It's that simple. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with your phone calls and our special guest this hour, Nick Redfern, on Coast to Coast AM. And we're back with Nick Redfern, and we're going to take your phone calls. And Nick, you ready? We'll go right to him.
Okay.
Let's go to our wild card line. You are on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the show. Hi there. Go ahead.
Hi.
Yes.
George and Nick, my question, this is actually Jesse, but...
Hi, Jesse.
My question is about... Edgar Cayce and UFOs. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Edgar Cayce, but I've read a few books.
Oh yes,
by
very
him.
Much so.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's he seemed very legit to me. But a question was asked to him about there being life on other planets that kind of surprised me. And I can read the question to you if you'd like.
Sure, go ahead.
The question was: are any of the planets other than the Earth inhabited by human beings or animal life of any kind? And the answer that he gave was no, for only upon the Earth plane at present do we find man is flesh and blood. Upon others we find those conditions of his own making in preparation for his own development. But I've always known that aliens are real, so I'm not sure what to make of this.
Well, and Edgar wasn't right on everything.
Okay.
No, I think...
So I don't have to discount everything he's ever said.
No, not at all.
I think, Jeff...
Go ahead.
One of the things I would say is that when, you know, it comes to sort of, I guess, foretelling the future in some respects, or, you know, looking at things like this, I think a lot of it is down to interpretation. You know, and people being people, I don't necessarily just get things wrong, but perhaps sometimes they misinterpret things. And, you know, I think it's like remote viewing. It's a skill that, as the military found out when it tried to use it in the 70s, 80s, and 80s, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it gave the wrong results because the remote viewer interpreted the information wrongly. So I think, you know, we're not, I guess... you know, a perfect species, and I think that would probably apply to extraordinary skills as well. And, you know, as George said, sometimes people get it right, sometimes they get it wrong, and I think that would probably apply in a case like this.
Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
George?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yes, my question is, we're always looking for answers towards the governments for information about UFOs. Could it be possible that UFOs themselves do not want to reveal? Maybe the alliance they have with the government, part of the bargain was not to reveal their covert operations, those abductions. And I'm just curious to know what the guest thinks about that.
Okay. Nick, I think that's very possible, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, George. I think, you know, when we look at back to when the whole UFO controversy, I guess, really kicked off in the 40s and early 50s, I mean, there have been rumors time and time again that some sort of bargain or meeting was arranged at various times in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Some sort of, you know, a liaison, if you like, between the superpowers and these alien intelligences. And, you know, I wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if we did find out that part of the secrecy was, I guess, generated not just on our part, but to allow these beings to, as the caller said, you know, to conduct the sort of activities that they've purportedly been conducting, abductions, cattle mutilations, that sort of thing. You know, maybe the government, the trade-off was that, okay, as some people have said, we'll give you some technology in return for your silence. And perhaps it was one of these offers, almost, you know, the type of offer you can't refuse. You know, they're so far in advance of us, in advance of us. What do you do if you say no? Well, let's not try and find out. We'll just say yes.
Well, maybe Rod Serling was right, Nick. Maybe indeed it is to serve man, and we are nothing but part of a cookbook recipe.
Yeah, I think there's always this tendency to imagine that the aliens, so to speak, are friendly because they haven't destroyed us. But, you know, it's like I've said to people in the past before, that the farmer doesn't destroy the cows. He lovingly looks after them until the last minute, and then they get shipped off to the slaughterhouse. I'm not saying it is that bleak, but it doesn't necessarily have to be as black and white as, oh, they're good or they're bad. You know, I think it could be a long-term agenda. It could be something we just don't even understand as to why the secrecy and why they don't show themselves and why the government doesn't admit to it.
Well, it's time for our first-time caller. Hello there.
Good morning, George.
Morning. Where are you calling from?
Love this show. Wichita, Kansas.
Great. Thanks.
I'm from Colorado originally, and there is used to be a town between Fleming and Sterling, Colorado. It was called Galien.
What happened to it?
And it disappeared overnight. The old steamer pulled in, and everybody, of course, went off to their farms and whatnot. They came back in the next day to go to work, and there was nothing there. The buildings were gone. The train was gone. The tracks were gone. There was nothing. They dug 1,200 feet, thinking maybe it had sank into the ground or whatnot, but they never found a trace of that town. And I'm wondering, whatever happened, you know, is this the only town that's ever happened to? Did, you know, the only thing I can think of what happened is maybe like on Star Trek where they, you know,
beamed it aboard or something. Huh?
Pretty much. And I mean, I can't find anything about it, but I mean, it's gone.
Nick, that sounds like book number 8.
Yeah. I've not actually heard this story, but I mean, there's no doubt that if you look at, you know, within the realms of things like 4T and literature and the UFO subject, there are a lot of stories of weird disappearances. Aircraft, for example, locations like the Bermuda Triangle, the Devil's Triangle, you know, cattle mutilations, I guess, you know, cattle vanish, people get taken away. Sometimes there are stories of them not getting returned. You know, as I said, aircraft vanishing into literally thin air. So I guess there is a parallel for it in that respect. It's just unfortunate that I'm not really able to help the listener with this story. I just don't know that one.
Okay. Do you know of any other town that this has ever happened to?
I don't know of a town. I do recall a couple of stories, which I think maybe George will know. There was a famous one, I think, back in the 60s, where a lot of bodies vanished from a cemetery somewhere. I forget where that was now, but there are a lot of weird stories of people vanishing and that sort of thing, which is probably about the closest parallel that I could think of.
That's an incredible story. Would you email me some information on this, Kerry?
Yeah.
Okay, it's George at coast2coastam.com.
Okay.
I mean, I would love to follow up on that story.
It's an interesting one.
My gosh, the whole town just disappeared?
Yeah, there are weird cases like that. Mass abductions, you know, a lot of rumors along those lines. So, you know, there could be a tie in there, possibly.
Let's go to our next wildcard line. Go ahead, you're on the air with us.
Yes, hello, Nick Redfern.
Hi.
I am a military witness with FOIA documentation, and I have a question for you in regards to when you wrote about the government looking at ufology and ufologists, and I'm going to raise a controversial question with you, and I don't mean for it to cause dissension in the UFO community, but what do you think of the idea of some of the ufologists themselves being, you know, covert operatives? And I say that because I have tried to disclose to certain people who are regarded as like stars of the show and heroes of ufology, and they have treated me very badly. I've been lied to. I've been, you know, dismissed. I've been had my material taken, and then they blow me off, and I'm really ticked off about it, you know. And they always want people like me to come forward and disclose. And I mean, you know, that's anyway, I want to know what you think of that, and so I'm going to hang up and listen to you. Thanks.
Okay. That's actually a very interesting question, not one I've really been asked before. But I think, well, there's no doubt, for example, that, you know, when you talk about people in the UFO subject, possibly are some of them plants, etc., there's absolutely no doubt whatsoever that in the 50s and 60s, particularly, the CIA and the FBI were concerned about and had suspicions that several UFO researchers were unwittingly, not necessarily wittingly, but unwittingly working for the Soviets, and that they've been hired almost like in a dangling carrot situation along the lines of, if you find out some information for us, we'll provide you with ABC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in each case that the relevant agencies looked into, they never actually found any evidence of this. It was just a fear and a suspicion, I think partly grown out of paranoia. You know, you have, for example, researcher John Smith, hypothetically, sending a lot of letters to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base asking about what's going on there because he's interested in, say, Hangar 18 and the Hangar 18 legends. But the military then thinks, well, you know, is there another angle to this? Is he actually using his UFO research as a cover to find out what else we're doing at the base? So that was one area that the military and the intelligence community was looking at, the idea that there were not necessarily overseas people, but people who were being used by overseas intelligence agencies. And of course, the other side of the coin, as the caller mentioned, is the idea that there are people within the community today who are there, I guess, you know, under the auspices of acting like a UFO researcher, but really in the employ of the military or the intelligence world. I think to that I would say that I don't rule it out. I think I would find it surprising in the sense that they've never had their cover blown in, say, 30 or 40 years. You know, we haven't really come across one specific case where we can put our finger on it and say, yes, this person was responding to, you know, an official project and they were infiltrating the community and reporting back. Certainly there have been rumors along these lines, but there's never been hard, definitive proof of this. But then again, maybe there wouldn't be. You know, you can well imagine the situation might be quite flexible where, again, researcher John Smith receives an under-the-table payment for just going to UFO conferences and hanging out with the crowds, listening, and then preparing a report and filing it with the authorities. I think that wouldn't surprise me if that had happened, put it that way. But I would say that most of the information that I've uncovered is kind of the other way around, with the government spying on us rather than actually having its own spies within the community.
Let's go to our international line. A call from where? Where are you?
Hi, I'm in Toronto listening to AM 640 Talk Radio. My name is John.
Thank you. Go ahead, John.
I've got three sentences for you from a book from James Blish written in 1952.
Okay.
It's, we do not believe any group of men adequate enough or wise enough to operate without scrutiny or without criticism. We know that the only way to avoid error is to detect it, and the only way to detect it is to be free to inquire. We know that in secrecy, error undetected will flourish and subvert. Do you know who said that?
Who said that?
J. Robert Oppenheimer.
Well, you know, I think secrecy causes a lot of problems, you know, not just in the UFO subject, in all walks of life. And I think the longer the secrecy goes on, the more and more difficult it becomes to hide it, and more steps have to be taken to hide things. And, you know, I just wish we had sort of a, not just with respect to ufology, but a free and open society and not the kind of clamp downs on pretty much everything that seems to be going on right now.
I'm beginning to think, Nick, that elected presidents want to get to the bottom of it, probably send somebody out to get the information, and they get stonewalled, they get stopped. I don't think elected presidents are being told what's going on. Now, here's the question. Why?
Well, that is the sort of the $64,000 question. I think I would agree with you, though, George. I mean, most presidents, or a lot of presidents, are in for one term, 4 years. If they're lucky, they get in for a second term. And a lot of these people in the intelligence community and the military are career guys who are there for 20, 30 years. They build themselves up the ranks, you know, and then perhaps they go from the military to, you know, another branch, et cetera. And these are the people who have been brought up with the secrecy, and they understand why they're hiding it. My speculation would be that it isn't just the fact that aliens are amongst us. It would have to be something connected with the spin-offs, i.e. the technology, the military worth of the applications that could come from using this technology, and the idea of not sharing it, you know, with other nations in the sense that they might understand it before we do and then use it as a weapon. So I think it's the weapons side, the military side, also the economic angle. I mean, you look at the volatile state of the Middle East right now. Suppose we introduced a technology tomorrow which made all the oil-producing nations completely redundant. You know, what would that do? So I think there are all these sort of implications that possibly go through the minds of the people within the official world. And in some respects, ironically, I can actually understand why they might initiate a cover-up. But to me, I still think we should be told the truth. I don't think it justifies hiding from the human race that there really are other civilizations out there.
Okay, let's go next to our first-time caller line. Take it away. You're on Coast to Coast.
Yes, this is AJ in Tallahassee, Florida. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, AJ.
I'm sorry, it's my first time on radio ever in life, but I have to tell you guys a really awesome story.
All right.
Me and my roommate were camping in outside of Bristol, Florida, about 40 miles west of Tallahassee, and one guy was getting a phone call from our other roommate. He looked to see it was him. As soon as he flipped up, it dropped the call, and they all pointed up. They're like, AJ, do you see that? I looked up, and we're just going down a dirt road, and maybe 100 feet above our head, it's this weird-looking plane. I've never seen anything look like it. It looked almost like a lobster.
A lobster?
It was like a reverse V. You know how most jets are going V backwards?
Mm-hmm.
It was like a greater symbol, greater than symbol, with two red lights coming out where the claws would be. Have you guys heard of anything like that in North Florida?
Well, are you saying it was like kind of a triangular shape? Or is that what you meant?
Lobster flying above our heads.
And was it triangular, you said?
No, it was kind of long.
Like a lobster.
Yeah, kind of a lobster, and then two red lights coming out where the claws would be.
Nick, what kind of description do you normally get? This could have been a drone or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, certainly UFOs come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. I mean, the callers sounds an intriguing one. We get a lot of kind of long cigar-shaped objects, which I guess in some respects might be vaguely similar. Obviously, without sort of knowing if there are any other reports in the air, it's difficult to say what this was. Was it a UFO? Was it, as our technology develops, something we were building? I would say that most of the reports I get tend to be the flying triangle type variety, these huge humming black triangles with the three lights underneath. Or I tend to get a lot of drone type reports, which isn't necessarily surprising. You know, I think there's no doubt if you look at the news today, if you type in drone plus surveillance, you find all sorts of information on how police agencies around the world and the military are building these small drone aircraft. And I think as time goes on, it's going to be more difficult to differentiate between what's ours and what's, quote, theirs. But I think, you know, the drones could potentially be ours. The flying triangles, what's interesting about them is I've found a lot of reports from the 50s and 60s which would suggest a lot of these aren't aircraft, as some people tend to believe. But the classic flying saucers of, you know, decades ago, I don't really get many of those type of reports today.
All right, Nick, I want to thank you for being on the program.
Sure.
Really appreciate it. What's your next project? What are you up to?
Well, I'm working on a book on my other big interest, which is cryptozoology. And that's sort of
we're looking for the chupacabra?
I shall be out there again, hopefully next year, on another expedition, yeah.
Let's find it, huh? Once and for all.
Yeah, once and for all.
What about Bigfoot? Real?
Yeah, I think it's real. I mean, you look at things like back in China, thousands of years ago, you had this creature called Gigantopithecus, this giant ape. I wouldn't be at all surprised if what we see today are the descendants of, you know, this original massive ape that certainly did exist tens of thousands of years ago.
Absolutely. Nick, thanks again. Have a great holiday. Up next, first-time guest for me, Barbara Hand Clow, The Mayan Code, Time Acceleration and Awakening the World Mind.